Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 151 of Unblocking Crypto. How this is, I guess, Christmas week. So everybody is somewhat, hopefully, taking it easy, recovering from a crazy hectic year and preparing for probably what will be an even more hectic year in 2025.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw a tweet that had the Christmas Eve price of Bitcoin each year. And last year was like 46,000 and this year is like 95,000. So it's like, Jesus. It's kind of a crazy year.
Yeah. Oh, man. And there's so much stuff going on that's exciting. And Ohio just threw their name in the hat to have a Bitcoin Reserve Act introduced in their Congress. And they're what, like the third or maybe even fourth state now that is planning on doing some sort of strategic Bitcoin reserve, which is exciting. And I mean, it's still early. Like, nobody's actually really done it. Texas is pretty close, although they're not actually funding it, right? So, but it's getting close. And all this has happened without any of the states or really any countries kind of going crazy with this too.
Yeah, it's funny to me because it just feels like peer pressure occurs at the political scale too. You know, like once Trump kind of stands up and says, yeah, we're going to do this, we got, you know, the U.S. Marshals 200,000 Bitcoin, we'll put into a strategic stockpile and this and that and da da da, then it's like, oh, okay, well now it's okay, we'll do it too, and different states do it, and there's a lot of rumors about several different countries stacking and they're, you know, just haven't announced it, which is smart, because once you announce it, then it gets more expensive and it's tougher to get buy Bitcoin. But it's funny because, you know, without Donald Trump, you know, kind of indicating that they're going to do this, I don't think you see any of these things. You know, it's not like maybe Texas, you know, they're very Bitcoin friendly, but I haven't heard any much at all of coming out of Ohio or Pennsylvania over the years when it comes to being very Bitcoin and crypto friendly. So no, I like, you go from the El Salvadors and the Bhutans and, you know, countries that are small that people haven't really heard of. And now it's like, well, yeah, some Middle Eastern countries are probably involved. And then, you know, the United States is as a federal level. So, you know, when it comes to Bitcoin at an individual level, there's peer pressure. I mean, you got me into Bitcoin and I'm like, well, if Jason's into it, like, I don't want him at the time. I'm like, I don't want him making a whole bunch of money when I'm not. So I got to get in. And actually, the guy that bought our company, when he was like, I talked to him about it, and he was like, yeah, I just got so sick and tired of my friends being in it, and I'm not. And so I went ahead and just bought some. I don't even know anything about it. And so it's kind of feels that way, like corporations, like, well, MicroStrategy, their stock price is going up, I need to jump on it. And now countries and states are doing the same thing. So it's kind of interesting to watch. I haven't really watched something like this happen before.
Yeah, and you mentioned rumors about Middle Eastern countries and things like that. The biggest rumor right now is UAE could possibly hold $40 billion of Bitcoin, which would put them literally just behind MicroStrategy at somewhere around like 411,000 in Bitcoin, which is a crazy number if that's true. I mean, no one has said that for sure, but it's what's been floating around and people have been talking about it for quite some time that somebody's buying it. We just don't know who yet.
Right. And I mean, the Middle Eastern countries make a lot of sense because they're converting commodities into Bitcoin. Basically, instead of mining it and turning electricity into Bitcoin, they're selling oil for dollars and turning that into Bitcoin. So, you know, that's kind of a natural thing. Instead, I assume they print money too, but this is kind of the way it works. And 2025, you know, it could be crazy if some of these announcements roll out. And I mean, if the U.S. and UAE or a couple other countries are like, yeah, we're in the hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin, you're going to have, you know, the majority of the top 25 countries in GDP are going to be like, oh, we're at zero. We need to move. So I'm looking forward to it. Of course, on the flip side, Donald Trump could be like, ah, no, we just can't do it. It doesn't make sense from, you know, I'm not able to do this. And the whole thing, we could just be like stuck in like a 80 to 100 trading range for another 7 or 8 months or whatever. There's no telling.
Yeah. I mean, Arthur Hayes pretty much said his view of the strategic Bitcoin reserve is a very low probability. Although he did come out and said his prediction rate is probably in the 20-25% range. So don't take what he says to heart. But I mean, yeah, it's an uphill battle. But I mean, you got guys like Michael Saylor of MicroStrategy kind of proposing some crazy things on that too, just selling all the gold and buying Bitcoin, which would be very intriguing. And speaking of MicroStrategy, shocker, they bought more Bitcoin this week. So another like 5,200 Bitcoin for $561 million. It's the seventh week in a row that they've bought Bitcoin, and we're possibly going into a January, which could be a blackout period for some reason that they can't buy anything in January because of something. But do you know anything about that?
I'm not sure. MicroStrategy is doing a couple of things. One, they're going to issue like 10 billion more shares of stock so that they can issue more convertible notes. And I'm trying to figure out, like, Michael Saylor has been very defensive of his shareholders. You know, he's trying to do things for the shareholders so that their value accretes. But there's only like 300 and something million shares right now. So, I mean, I don't know what that means for shareholders, but I know what it means as far as them being able to basically blow the lid off of the $42 billion plan that they had. You know, they're going to reevaluate that and then bump those numbers up. And that's only been a daggum 6 weeks or 8 weeks since they announced they had a 3-year $42 billion plan. So I think that he's getting a ton of interest from the bond market for these convertible notes. And he's like, well, we might as well strike now while Bitcoin price is under 100 grand. And these notes, I mean, other companies are starting to get these convertible notes. Mara got one for $1 billion. And so I think he's kind of rushing forward. But I, as far as being a shareholder like me, I'm like, man, you're basically printing triple the shares that are available. So I'm kind of along for the ride, and I'm sure that there'll be a price dip, but I don't know what it means. So I've tried to listen, but it's Christmas week and I'm with my family, so I haven't been doing my normal several hours per day of listening to the most boring things ever. But I got to get to the bottom of that. I'm not selling, so I'm just going to ride. Okay. Yeah. I'm along for the ride. I'm not in a short-term trade with MicroStrategy. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely intriguing, but it's something to keep the eye on for sure. The other thing that I saw that was really intriguing, and I know we've talked a little bit about it in the past, was some of the news about Tornado Cash. And I don't know if you saw much about that, but the Fifth Circuit Appeals Court found that the sanctions on Tornado Cash by the U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control could not stand because it was not property, and that its immutable smart contracts put the decentralized mixing service outside of the control of any one person, which is a pretty big deal, right? If that's the case. And pretty much what Storm was saying, who's the guy getting sued, is that this throws the entire lawsuit out. So there's three charges. One of them for sure is probably going to be thrown out. The other ones I think are still kind of to be determined. One of them I think is money laundering, and the other one is operating an unlicensed money transmitting business. So the money laundering is really interesting, because money laundering, it's if it's found that there's a conspiracy to commit money laundering, that it doesn't require the defendant to be guilty of, involved in, or even aware of the specifics of the specified activity, which is crazy to me. Like, you can be charged for money laundering even though you didn't know you're doing it, like, or I don't know. So there's some more stuff we've worked out there, but I guess what's intriguing is that it's a service, or it's not a service, because there's no human effort involved, and because of the immutable smart contracts, no human intervention is actually even possible to do. So we'll see what happens with that, but that's kind of some interesting news that's happened from the freedom space here lately too.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add there is that there's some discussion in there that I haven't gotten to the bottom of about property and the digital assets being considered property or not. And so that ruling may move the needle for digital assets and how they're viewed. And then I don't know if that has implications on taxes or other digital assets and things like that, because some of these rulings are written that this only applies to this case. It's very specific. These judges are not, you know, they're very careful not to set a precedent when they don't want to. So I need to dig into it, but there was something mentioned of like, if you can't manipulate it, if you can't have, if you don't have control over it, then it's not your property or something to that effect. And so I'm kind of curious to see what that means, because I mean, I can move my Bitcoin around. I can, does that qualify as property? So I'm kind of, we'll see where this goes. This is another one of those first steps, in my opinion, in the eventually legislation will determine all this stuff if soon as Congress starts passing legislation again. But until then, the judicial system is going to have to kind of define what digital assets are and force the hand of the legislators to pass something and define things. Because right now it's, everything seems like we're waiting for judges to rule if things are a security or not. And so anyway, the Tornado Cash case, I think we'll look back on it and it'll be like, oh, this is a pretty significant deal.
Yeah, I agree. And there was another Trump appointee or that's related to the crypto space. So Beau Hinds, who he's like a 29-year-old, used to play football at NC State and then I think Yale or something like that, was trying to go after the Republican nomination in North Carolina, didn't get it, got a lot of his funding from pro-crypto people. He has now been, I guess, appointed as the executive director of the Presidential Council of Advisors for Digital Assets, which Trump pretty much refers to as the crypto council. And David Sacks was the one that was in charge of spearheading, I guess, crypto and AI. So he's going to be working with Sacks, moving crypto forward. I think there's another AI executive director that's separate than Bo that will work with David Sacks on the AI piece. But it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do. The little bit that I've seen on this crypto council is it's anywhere between like 10 and 100 members. Nothing's really set yet. So could that group actually come up with some regulations that make sense? And I would think this Tornado Cash discussion, ruling, whatever you want to call it, is going to be a big piece of that too.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on that council, you need to take this stuff into consideration because you can't, like, you, I guess you could. I don't know. It's tough because that's an executive branch thing, right? So they're not going to write laws. They're just going to provide like executive guidelines. And you're not going to be able to cross over what the judicial branch has already set. So they're going to have to play some political games, even though they're like David Sacks isn't a politician and neither is this 29-year-old guy.
No.
So like, they're going to have to learn, they're going to have to hire some attorney to be like, figure this out. Well, this is what we want to do. Figure out how we can do it. So
Yeah.
it'll be interesting to see like how the private industry guys do working in a government role. So I'm kind of looking forward to it because they're focused on getting stuff done. Like David Sacks will move the needle. And this guy's any 29-year-old tech guy is not interested in sitting in Washington and having two martini lunches and getting nothing done. So I'm looking forward to seeing like just action, just movement. We haven't seen any movement in a decade.
Yeah, I mean, most of these people want to make things happen. I mean, as a 29-year-old, you want to actually be able to say, here's my stamp of what I did in this space as the first executive director for a crypto council ever, right? So I'm intrigued to see what's going to happen. I'm optimistic. I know it's probably not going to happen, or not enough of it's going to happen, in my opinion, but at least if something happens at this point, then I think we'll be in a much better spot than we have been, at least for the past 4+ years.
Oh, I mean, if we're still moving at the pace that we're moving at with all of this effort from the executive, then I'm just gonna lower my expectations, extend my timelines, like everything's gonna be slower. I mean, I've already kind of, whenever the price starts to peel back and even in a bull run, you kind of like, oh man, okay, maybe I'm crazy. This is gonna take a while. And then, like 3 weeks from now, we could be at 125,000 in Bitcoin. I could be right back into like, here we go, we're going to 500,000. And it's like even I've been doing this for like 7 years, and it still happens to me. It's pretty wild. So, anyway, man, the government stuff I'm looking forward to. We're what 3 4 weeks away from the regime change in Washington, and the first day, and then I think if on day one he actually does some Bitcoin things, I think that that'll tell me a lot. If it gets moved into like the first 100 day, plan, then that'll be like, okay, man, this is not as big of a priority as we thought. So, but you know, Russ Ulbricht commuting, having his sentence commuted and having the 200,000 Bitcoin put into a stockpile, to me, are things that could easily be done when Donald Trump's just signing executive order after executive order on day one. And you just throw those in there.
I mean, I'm surprised Biden hasn't done it for Ross, so since he did everybody else, apparently, so to try to take some of the wind out of Trump's sails. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens on day one for sure. There is some positive news coming out of the SEC, which I feel like is not something we can usually say lately, but they SEC actually approved some more ETFs, and they're now Bitcoin Ethereum combo funds from both Hashdex and Franklin Templeton. They're market cap weighted, so that it's probably going to be like 80% Bitcoin, 20% Ethereum, but both of them want to add more cryptos in the future. So I think Hashdex has talked about Avalanche, Chainlink, and Litecoin adding it in there in the future. And I mean, we talked about this doing the top 10 a long time ago, right? But
yeah,
us doing an ETF is not as easy as it probably sounds. I'm excited to see that other people are doing this and learning or taking our ideas and running with it.
Yeah, and you know, as long as the ETFs are actually on the up and up, which I believe they are, and they're actually buying the underlying Bitcoin and Ethereum, then I'd go for it. I'm just the more this goes on, the more I view the ETFs as just like a TradFi layer two on top of the Ethereum or Bitcoin or Avalanche or Litecoin or whatever. You know, it feels like it's the same thing, and quite frankly, it opens up a pool of funds that wouldn't otherwise be exposed to the asset class. And that's good for everybody in the asset class. It's weird. You know, yeah, you can't trade your Bitcoin and you can't, you know, you can't go to El Salvador and buy lunch with it. But, you know, the longer we go and the more that I'm kind of buy into this store of value thing, you know, we may have a store of value narrative for 10 or 20 years before people are like, enough people are into Bitcoin and value it to start seeing things for sale in the United States in Bitcoin.
Well, I think I even read something about Hester Pierce talking about in-kind redemptions might be on the table in the near future, which would be awesome for the ETFs if we were able to do that too.
It would be. I would be super curious to see, like, if I buy Bitcoin in my IRA and I can in-kind, I can move Bitcoin from inside of the IRA into a wallet. How do I track that Bitcoin is in an IRA and it's tax deferred and not exposed to taxes? So like, that'll be a tricky one to figure out, but it would be neat to be able to move Bitcoin like without having to sell my ETF Bitcoin that I bought as soon as it opened, and I can put it in a hardware wallet. That would be neat.
Oh, I think next year the IRS is going to require, and I say next year, so April of 2026, when you file your taxes, then they're going to require crypto reporting on a per wallet basis. So, which is going to be super annoying. Hopefully the software systems can take care of that. But I mean, if you're transferring in kind from an IRA to a wallet, then maybe that takes care of that issue. I don't know. We'll see.
I'd be curious because, like, I mean, are you going to allow an individual like me to designate a wallet as an IRA wallet? And then, because like, if I sell it, there's penalties and things like that. I don't know. We'll see what happens, man. But a wallet by wallet track, I mean, like, that's going to be gross. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know. I've got stuff split into like just Bitcoin. I've probably got 8 wallets. So
it's kind of weird. Yeah. I know the feeling. It would be easy at this point.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and what if it's on an exchange, it's not in a wallet. So then do I have to do, like, if I've got some in Strike and some in Coinbase, I got to monitor that every year too. Like, I don't know. Yeah, IRS needs to come out with some real clear direction on what to do, because I know that they want to make a change so that a lot of people are, when they sell, if they buy on Coinbase and sell on Coinbase, and they buy on Strike and sell on Strike, they're treating them differently, like from a first in, first out basis. And the IRS wants that to change so that no matter what Bitcoin you sell across different exchanges, or if you move it around and everything, it's all in one bucket and it's all first in, first out, or whatever, if you first in, last out, whatever your original tax plan is. So I'm kind of curious to see like how they unwind it, but there's supposed to be like a safe harbor period where you can fix your previous stuff if you did it differently. But this is what happens when you don't come out and tell people how to do things. Like, yeah. I got a daggum Excel spreadsheet. Like, you're talking about, oh man, the software might be able to handle it. I'm like, how can I adjust my daggum spreadsheet so I can track all this stuff? Like, it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be weird. But when there's a market need, Coinbase or somebody's going to come out with some really good software that makes it easy. Or TurboTax ought to come out and jump in front of this and have people do that. But I mean, it's going to be super annoying. Some of these people are going to have 100 wallets across all these different cryptocurrencies, and they're going to have to copy and paste, 64 character wallet addresses with the value in native tokens. And that spot price when they file their taxes, I guess, in U.S. dollars. It's a clumsy way to do this. Until the IRS comes out with something clear, there's a million ways to do this and think you're doing it right if you're a crypto holder. And if they don't tell you how to do it, then you can, like, you know, when you sign your tax return, it says, to the best of my ability, these things are true. Like, to the best of my ability, I'm trying to be honest about, what I'm doing with Bitcoin and crypto. But if they don't tell me how to do it, like, the best of my ability may not be acceptable for them.
Yeah, I mean, since all this stuff is on public ledgers, right, it is possible for some of these places to go pull the data if you give them the right address. I mean, the software systems that I use, it's like $100 a year that you pay for, and you give them, you can download all the data or do whatever you want to do, and it calculates all the cost basis for you. And especially when you're doing over multiple chains, multiple coins, and that's super helpful. Hopefully it's accurate, right? But it is, that's kind of the companies that I expect will try to decipher what the IRS actually wants and turn it into something. But yeah, like you said, we've all done it one way. Now is it going to switch, and how does that affect what we've done in the past? So that's a whole other issue.
But I mean, I just stumbled across that. It's not like it's been widely announced that they want to see a change.
So
they need to be really clear.
Well, this is government talking. Don't expect clarity.
Yeah.
So there's also some other interesting kind of big news. Crypto.com had a lawsuit against the SEC. They just dropped that after meeting with Trump here recently, and kind of, I think, posted on Twitter they were excited about having a seat at the table moving forward. So I don't know if that means somebody from crypto.com will be part of this crypto council or what that means, but I mean, I would assume, since they are one of the larger exchanges, they'll have at least one voice on that council.
Yeah, I think if you're putting a council together, like somebody from Coinbase and somebody from Kraken, and have the different members from the exchanges to be there.
The big ones from the US, as he wants to have more US based, right? So yep, that would make sense. And then the last kind of big news from an SEC perspective that I saw was the vote for Caroline Crenshaw, who is one of the five SEC commissioners. Her reconfirmation vote has officially been canceled. So she's most likely out.
Oh, yeah. I think she's definitely out. I think she's just not even going to be put up for confirmation. Like, she's done.
She has an opportunity to try to come back early next year and make her case. Now that you have a pro-crypto Congress and Senate, why would they even consider her at this point based on what she's done in the past? So I'm not saying it's not possible. I just say it's not probable that she's going to spend much time and effort saying, oh, maybe I've changed my mind, I want to be part of this. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I read that, and my interpretation was that she's going to be out, or maybe it's a 90% chance she's out. And I'm like, no matter who comes in, it's an improvement for guys like us. So so that's positive. You get Gensler out and her out. Those are the two, roadblocks when it comes to this sort of thing. There's one more guy that's not as bad as those two, but he's going to be outnumbered. So I'll take it.
Voted to approve the spot Bitcoin ETFs. She didn't. So, I mean, as bad as Gensler is, you could call her worse.
Yep. So, yeah. That's the way I see it.
But kind of exciting there. The other thing, and shoot, do you have an Exodus wallet? Have we ever talked about this?
Don't think so.
So Exodus has been around since like 2015. They are a software wallet company that I've used for a very long time. They are now, they were one of the, I think the, probably one of the first companies to put their shares, tokenize their shares, and did it a long time ago. And I think they've been fighting for a while in the courts. They're now officially on the American New York Stock Exchange stuff. So it's been kind of a long time coming. What's cool about them, they have zero debt, have like 1900 Bitcoin and just over 2600 Ethereum in their treasury. So they're kind of, I mean, at this point, considered a lot of the other companies, they're a pretty big company from in terms of amount of Bitcoin in the, on their treasury. So exciting to see them making it into an American stock exchange, and we'll kind of see what happens. But it's, I mean, they're a pure crypto play. Like, they're not all these other companies that do something and then also are trying to get more involved in crypto. Crypto is all they do. So it's exciting to see them start to get the attention that they deserve, probably.
Yeah, I mean, 1900 Bitcoin puts them, it's got to be in like the top 10 of Bitcoin holders and of from corporate reserves go. Because I was looking at a chart somebody put up, and it was like the top 30 companies, like the 30th company had like under 100 Bitcoin on their balance sheet. So, you know, it's it, you talk about MicroStrategy and they got 400,000 Bitcoin and all this, and like, it doesn't take much before you get into like not a lot of Bitcoin and is making news. I mean, I saw one company, you know, the X feed gives me basically a notification of everything. And somebody bought like $1.5 million in Bitcoin, and it was like, I mean, it kind of was news. You know, it's a new company and it's adding in a smaller company and things like that. But, you know, I mean, you're talking about like so-and-so bought 12 Bitcoin. Like, man, that's news. You know, think about it, man. If things go the way they look like they're going 6 years from now, 12 Bitcoin is going to be big news.
Yeah, when you heard you say million, I was like, did you mean billion? I was like, no, he meant million.
Yeah.
Just so used to like MicroStrategy, where it's like talk about in billions, not millions anymore.
Yeah. No, it's like Marathon and MicroStrategy are the only ones talking about billions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is also in the news too. They just got approval to delist Wrapped Bitcoin. And there were, so Wrapped Bitcoin, I think, was originally part of BitGlobal's piece or whatever, and they had requested a temporary restraining order from having Coinbase delist it. They said that it would create imminent and irreparable harm if they delisted Wrapped Bitcoin. Now, this all came about when I think BitGlobal added Justin Sun as an advisor, and there's a lot of worry about Justin Sun causing some problems with Wrapped Bitcoin and the custody and putting on Tron and all this kind of stuff. And Coinbase came out with their CB Bitcoin, CBBCTC, so their own version of Wrapped Bitcoin. So what's kind of crazy is the attorney for Coinbase kind of came out and said, well, look, Wrapped Bitcoin's trading volume on Coinbase is less than 1% of all Wrapped Bitcoin's total overall trading. So it's a very small piece on Coinbase. So they are going to be able to delist Wrapped Bitcoin. World Liberty, which we talked about in the past, is related to Trump and his sons, and Justin's son pretty much donated, what, $30 million, which is probably about half the almost half the amount of money that they raised. Well, they just swapped their $10 million of CBBTC for Wrapped Bitcoin, I guess, to be on the Justin Sun side rather than the Coinbase side. So a little bit of kind of pissing matches going on back and forth between some of these companies, but yeah, expect for Wrapped Bitcoin to be delisted from the Coinbase marketplace moving forward.
Yeah, these are the things that make me glad that I don't play in those pools. Like, I'm not swimming in that water at all. Like, you pick the wrong one, you pick the wrong lowercase letters in front of BTC, and now you got to figure out, well, which one am I going to jump onto? And man, just keep it in Bitcoin and you don't have to sweat it.
Yeah. So we talked about the TradFi space and how some of this, you expected the ETFs to be almost like a layer two on top of Bitcoin. What was interesting to me, and I know we've talked some about the zero knowledge proofs and where I see that going in the future, and I think it becoming a big piece. Deutsche Bank just announced their plans to launch a ZK layer two on ZK Sync, which is the Ethereum layer two, which will give them the ability to tailor solutions that really enable privacy, scalability, and interoperability with other public and private blockchains. The piece about what they're doing, though, is they're mainly focused on the TradFi space, though. They're not focused on the retail space. But it's exciting to see, for me, ZK technology used in the TradFi space to get blockchain more involved. So I'm excited to see that. I'll be intrigued to see where it goes and how it gets implemented, and if this means that more other large companies are going to start looking at zero-knowledge type solutions to help make their privacy and all that kind of good stuff a little bit more secure.
Yeah, I'm not really following these stories, so I'm happy to listen to what you have to say.
Well, the one thing I think you will like, we El Salvador and the IMF have been kind of in a pissing battle here lately.
Yes.
So IMF, I guess El Salvador is trying to get a $1.5 billion loan. IMF said, okay, we'll give it to you, but you have to change your Bitcoin law. So the law doesn't, you can't force the private sector to accept Bitcoin. So now it's going to be voluntary for the private sector to use Bitcoin, and they're going to restrict the public sector. And then they also want to gradually reduce the role in the Chivo wallet program, which to me shouldn't be that hard. Just offload it all to Strike and say, yes, okay, Strike handles this. This is the wallet that you're going to use. It's not owned by El Salvador or anything like that. So in order to do all this, they're going to get like $1.5 billion. What's kind of funny is Max Keiser, who's one of their strategic advisors, said that El Salvador is planning to acquire another 20,000 Bitcoin, and they have just under six, like 5,993 right now. So 20,000 Bitcoin, of course, would be about $2 billion in today's prices. If El Salvador does all this, they get the $1.5 billion and have a path to get $3.5 billion, which is interesting because that difference between $1.5 and $3.5 is about $2 billion. So are they going to do this, change the law, buy $2 billion worth of Bitcoin, and then be like, okay, we're done and we're changing everything back after that? I mean, it'd be kind of funny for them to do that to the IMF, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, so when we were in El Salvador, you know, it was pretty obvious that accepting Bitcoin was voluntary. Like, it was just an unenforceable law, right? You can't go in and make sure every shop and mom and pop place is accepting Bitcoin. And, you know, in El Zante, it was widely accepted. Outside of El Zante, it was like, well, we can accept Bitcoin, but we got to go over to this CAD register because that's the one that has the thing. And it dropping the Shiba wallet or whatever is no big deal because everything's open sourced anyway. So you can, you know, when I was in El Salvador, we did, a dozen or so Bitcoin transactions. None were on the Shiba wallet. They were all done with Wallet of Satoshi and all these other things. So like I use Strike and everybody's like, ew, gross. Like, and I'm like, well, I'm in America. So like you guys have options that I don't have. Anyway, so I think that this is a nice bone to throw to the IMF to get the $1.5 billion. And, you know, El Salvador has been buying one Bitcoin per day for a long time now.
Yeah.
And the out of the last 3 days, they bought 11 Bitcoin instead of one. They're like, they're doing a pretty solid, speculative attack on the dollar through IMF loans. If they actually do pull this off, which would be, I think it would be great. Like, I mean, you know, I'm so pro Bitcoin. I'm at the point now where, you know, going to zero or stalling out and being like just kind of we're stuck here for a long time. It just doesn't feel like that's going to happen. I'm very convinced that we're going up. I'm not one of these people that's nuts to think we're going to be at a million next year and it's never going to come down. But, you know, Bitcoin's going to be successful. It works. People like it. And man, if you're El Salvador and you're starting to stack 10 Bitcoin a day every day, you're talking about really putting yourself in a great spot considering you're a tiny country with the low GDP. But no, I would consider going back to El Salvador. It's a cool place.
Yeah. Well, the other thing related to Bitcoin that I saw, I don't know, you probably haven't paid much attention to Sui or Sui, however you say it. There's some interesting collaboration going on there. There's a plan to use Sat Layer to restake Bitcoin and build out more DeFi capabilities, part of which is Sui is supposed to be kind of this one of the next Solanas, right? So it's faster, cheaper, more secure, theoretically open more often than Solana is. But their goal as, I mean, I think Cardano's done something similar, is they want to be another way to increase the DeFi capabilities of Bitcoin, right? And allow people to use Bitcoin in DeFi across many different platforms. So exciting to see. They're not the only ones doing it, but adding another major player or possible major player in the near future is exciting for, I think, Bitcoin and everybody else as well.
Yeah, it's hit my radar a little bit. I haven't really looked into it much, but it people seem to be saying, you know, it'll be a competitor for Solana, which Solana seemed to be making some headway into being a competitor for Ethereum. So, you know, it's the trouble when you're playing the crypto game of which horse do I ride, because I need to catch up. And if you're just in the long-term Bitcoin play, then you don't have to play those games. So yeah, it's worth watching, because there's definitely a use case in the down ballot crypto currencies, but you know, it's almost like they fight each other and would be better off just like becoming popular in the market. We'll see. I don't know too much about it, but it is about time in the cycle to have some new coins you never heard of start to really make a run. And so, yeah, maybe that's one of them.
Yeah. You talked about Strike, and I guess I probably should have brought this up when we started talking about Strike. Strike was involved in some major news in the NIL space, the name, image, and likeness in college football. So one of the first high school athlete to agreed or to get compensation in Bitcoin just happened. There, I think it's Matai Tagoi or something like that. He's going to be playing for you in 2025. A portion of his compensation will be in Bitcoin, and it's through a collaboration with Strike. So exciting to see. I'm expecting this to happen a lot more. I know we've talked about some of the NFL players that have done it in the past, but I don't know if we've seen any high school kids do this. But you would think more and more of them are probably going to be doing it moving forward if that's the case.
Yeah, I think if you look at what the best use case for Bitcoin as a savings vehicle in a four-year cycle, if you accept half of your freshman year NIL money in Bitcoin and don't touch it, how much money do you need your freshman year in college, especially as an athlete, where your room and board's covered? And I mean, like basically everything's free anyway. So yeah, man, you know, like live a college lifestyle and, you know, live on $15,000 a month instead of 30, throw half of it into Bitcoin. And then and when you graduate from college, you have a huge stash of Bitcoin to play with. So I like it. I think it's a good way to do it. I think it's, you know, responsible. I mean, this NIL money where these freshmen are making $500,000 in a year, like this is a wild thing to hand to a 19-year-old kid. And so if you said, hey, I'm your dad, you need to put a bunch of this money into Bitcoin and sit on it and do nothing, and you can live in a college lifestyle instead. I think instead, you know, a lot of these guys don't play NFL football. They don't make money in football after they graduate from college. So man, stash a bunch of Bitcoin your 4 years in college, and then you basically built yourself a pension and, you know, go get your job and work for 10 or 20 years and then use your NIL money Bitcoin to retire on when you're 40. Like it'd be a pretty slick way to handle it.
Or earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the guy from BYU is getting $7 million, right? I mean, it's crazy. So
yeah,
there's some insane money going on in the NIL space.
Yeah, but what's $7 million going to do for you 25 years from now? You know, it falls apart. So you throw it in, at least some of it's got to go into Bitcoin, man, because you could be set. Like, yeah, you know, when I was a kid or when I was in college or whatever, I was like, oh, man, every dollar I save is worth, you know, $10 to $15 when I retire. But like, if I had Bitcoin, it'd be like every dollar I save might be $200 when I retire. So you got to, you know, a lot of people don't think like that when you're 19 years old. You don't have your prefrontal cortex developed. You're not thinking about 10, 20, 30 years in the future. But man, what an opportunity for these guys to have a crazy amount of money when they're 19 and Bitcoin is under 100,000. Like, what a Venn diagram of opportunity that they find themselves in.
I mean, even if, you know, taking $1 million and you go and buying 10 Bitcoin, that puts you in an elite space in Bitcoin, considering there's only 21 million ever.
That's going to happen. Yeah, you'd make news. If you did it as a company, you'd make news.
Yeah. So one of the other things that I saw that was pretty interesting, I mean, we've been talking about exponential growth happening in crypto for quite a while, and it's somewhat harder to see when you're looking at it from a day-to-day space, but if you look at what Base has happened, what Base has done in this past year, it is crazy. So their new monthly acquired users grew 57x this year. They had about 244,000 in January and about 4.7 million in November. And if you look at all the others, well, so they did a report of looking at seven other chains. So Arbitrum, Avalanche, Base, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Optimism, and Polygon, which a lot of those are also layer twos on Ethereum. Base accounted for just under 14 million of the just over 19 million new users that were created. So it is an insane amount of growth that Base is having compared to the rest of the industry right now. And I mean, good for Coinbase, good for Base. It's also good for Ethereum, right? There's just a lot of things going on there that's exciting, and hopefully that continues. We'll see if that starts to slow down a little bit, but that's some big numbers.
Yep. No, I mean, 57X means you're growing.
And then one of the last things that I saw was, man, Craig Wright. I think at one of these days I got to stop talking about him, but he kept telling everybody he was Satoshi. He's filed multiple lawsuits. He was told, okay, you're not Satoshi. We're going to, I think it's what, April or something like that, his arraignment was going to happen. They said, don't file any more lawsuits. In that same court, he came back and he filed another lawsuit, so he's now being held in contempt for filing a lawsuit saying that he's Satoshi again. And it's like, what is wrong with this guy? And I think one of the big attorneys said it's rare for someone having been ordered not to file legal proceedings to do that exactly in the same court that issued the prohibition. So he's a mess. And then he didn't even show up for court because he said he was busy in a different country doing work. And I think COPPA, which is the company that he had kind of gone to court against, said, oh, we'll pay for your plane ticket to come back.
Yeah, I mean, also, just move one Bitcoin out of Satoshi's wallet and tell everybody when you're going to do it, and then now you don't have to go to court anymore. Like, it's
super simple.
It's dumb. So dumb.
Yeah. Oh, well. What else did I miss? Anything else on your radar?
I think that's about it. I think we added enough color to the week's news for this week.
Yeah, it was the only other thing that I had, it was more kind of a personal story. I've gotten excited because my kids are now asking to buy more Bitcoin. We put some of their savings into Bitcoin and they got excited about it. And now they're comparing their Bitcoin balances to each other. And I told them their goal needs to get to be like 0.1 Bitcoin, which will take a while based on the amount of money that they have. But
yeah, I my son got a $50 Amazon gift card for Christmas. And I was like, oh, hey, look at this. Da, da, da. You got a gift card. He's like, oh, how much is it? She's like, $50. He said, Bitcoin.
That's awesome.
I was like, all right, I'll trade you. I'll put it on my Amazon account. I'll put 50 Bitcoin in your account. No problem. So he's like watching. I built a Google Sheet for him so that he can track like what he bought when and what it's worth and what the cumulative value is. And so I got a tab for him and a tab for my daughter. And, you know, they got their own personal Bitcoin stash and they've got their car fund Bitcoin stash. So it'll be interesting to see if this play works out. But I mean, at the very least, I'm already up pretty good on on all this stuff. So, you know, 4 years from now, I would imagine that it'll be a decent use case to turn some Bitcoin into a car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my son is kind of thinking the same thing. He's like, oh, I can buy a Lamborghini. And I was like, yeah, but he keeps pointing them out on the road and they're like Kias. That type of Lamborghini you might be able to afford.
Yeah, I mean, my son's in the same boat. And he's like, I'm like, I still get to say, no, you can't have a Lamborghini. Like, it is your money. You have earned it. But if it does end up to be enough to buy something that will wrap you around a tree at 18 years old or 17 years old, I'm like, oh, no, we're going to, you know, there's old Jeeps that look super cool that have 3-speed transmissions that go 60 miles an hour top. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, my son's about a decade away from driving, so I have a feeling his tastes are going to change between now and then. So I'm not too worried about arguing what he can and cannot drive at this point.
Yeah, just two Bitcoin cycles away from driving.
Yeah, and just save more money into Bitcoin, and we'll talk about it when we get there.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
Awesome. Well, enjoy your Christmas, Hal, and we'll talk to you next week as things slow down.
Sounds good. Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.